This is Shop Talk, our weekly discussion of journalism issues. I'm Rich Ecker.
I'm Rich Moreno.
And I'm Jasmine Crichton.
Hey, last week it was revealed that when she was Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton used a private email account extensively in place of a public account, shielding many of her correspondences from open records requests. We talked during last week's program about this sort of general issue. We talked about the lawyer for the new governor of Maryland telling staffers to stamp all correspondences as executive privilege, which is the equivalent of saying top secret and off limits to reporters. Ms. Clinton's actions are just another example of this increasingly secretive nature of government that we talked about last week. Before we move on to this week's topic, I just wanted to quickly toss that out there. I don't know if either of you has anything more to say about that.
I'd say there's a reason that you don't want your government officials to have to be doing business on private email accounts is because they can't be held accountable to anything, any of those communications. And the State Department had no access to those emails. And it goes back to the Benghazi. I mean, they weren't able to access any of those documents until just recently. I think she's come forward with about 50,000 emails.
That's what it said in the New York Times. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's only until very recently. And before that, we had no access, and neither did the government.
No, it's my understanding, not to defend her, but that apparently no previous Secretary of State also used a government as a email account as a primary. Colin Powell didn't do that either. But notwithstanding that, whether she broke any kind of rules or laws, I think it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She's a government official, and everyone who goes into public service knows there has to be transparency. And this is certainly counter to that kind of transparency. Now, I don't know what kind of ultimate impact this will have on whether she decides to run for president, but it's not a positive sign for the media if she does run and she does get elected. She essentially maintained her own server in her house that her email account was through, which means it was totally off any grid.
Yeah.
I understand, the Clintons are secretive and, et cetera, but this kind of takes it to a whole new level.
Well, she definitely knew what she was doing there by having that independent server.
And, yes, she turned over 50,000 pages of government-related emails. What about the ones she didn't?
Mm-hmm.
We have no way of knowing, are there 100,000? And she only turned over half of them. I mean, we have no way of knowing what we're not getting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's doing the public's work. It should be the public's business. The public should be able to see what it is that she's been doing, sort of as we talked about last week.
Yeah.
As for this week, we want to talk a little bit about the differences between public relations and journalism. In an article on the Take Part website, Eric Alterman writes about how public relations is killing journalism. And he says that's a problem even if you're not a journalist. Alterman says there are now 4.6 public relations specialists in America for every one reporter. And those PR specialists, Jasmine, make considerably more money on average than reporters.
Oh, yes. And I see quite a few people going into the PR business when they're finished with their journalism career.
Even when it's when they're not forced out.
Right.
They're still making that choice. I did.
Mm-hmm.
But we can talk about that later.
Yeah.
But do you agree with his theory that public relations is killing journalism?
I don't. I'd have to say that journalism is killing journalism. And my meaning behind that is I think executives, I think the people who are making the financial decisions are killing journalism, at least as we've known it.
I would agree. I think you can look at the newspaper industry the last 20 years, and it's just been one big misstep after another. They didn't understand the internet. They didn't take advantage of the internet in the way that they might have. They allowed all of these other independent groups, aggregators, Huffington Post, et cetera, to kind of take the lead. And now the barn doors open, the horse is out, and there's not much that can be done. They're trying paywalls. They're trying all kinds of other things. But I just don't think that they have managed the properties particularly well. over the last 20 years, really. And I think now we're seeing the fruit of that mismanagement. Mm-hmm. You know, they also the whole consolidation thing in the 1980s, of buying up all your rivals, taking on tremendous amounts of debt. I mean, part of it was they had unrealistically high returns. Owning a newspaper or a chain was like minting money in the 1970s and 80s. And they assumed that those 20% returns were going to be normal. And that's just not.
Yeah.
And now they're still making money, but they're making 4% and 5%, more in line with most other industries. But they took on those huge amounts of debt. And so now we see chains like McClatchy, chains like Gannett, Gatehouse, which mm-hmm. is, in and out of bankruptcy all the time. And that's the nature of the industry today. And unfortunately, getting back to the point of this whole conversation, they're taking it out on the frontline workers,
right.
The reporters, the editors, the ones who do the work. They're, because of their mismanagement and their bad decisions, they now have to cut and most of the expense is in personnel.
Yeah. And that's one reason why you have that disparity, 4.6 public relations specialists for every one reporter in America. It's not necessarily a case that PR firms are hiring more people. It's mm-hmm. that journalism staffs have been cut back.
Well, there's like half as many people in the industry than there were in the mid-1980s?
Well, there is a need for journalists, but we're not seeing people being hired. Mm-hmm. We're seeing staffs being let go at increasing amounts, especially in print, especially. Mm-hmm. We've seen, entire photographers. Mm-hmm. We've seen
the Sun-Times recently.
Yeah, the Sun-Times have let go of their photographers. We've seen plenty of people lose their jobs in this industry, and not because they weren't doing a good job and they weren't good storytellers, because it was the bottom line. It was the money they wanted to make. And if they could freelance the work out, not pay health costs or, and do something like that, they could get rid of those people and have a computer even do it, they will make that cut. And what are you doing to the staff there, and what are you doing to morale as well?
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Do you feel, especially in broadcast media, that part of the problem, part of what's killing journalism too, is this management mentality of giving people what they want? For example, a video of a squirrel mm-hmm. on water skis.
Yeah, the water skiing
squirrel. As opposed to giving audiences what they need. And it's just become laughable. Does anyone really turn to a television newscast to get serious information to really become an informed citizen?
I think that some people do, but within increasing amounts of people don't anymore. We see a lot of people cutting the cord, so they don't have cable television anymore, and they don't have even their broadcast channels. There is a decline in credibility. I mean, Pew has done many different studies on this, the Pew Research Center. And I was looking at that, and they did a study on news organizations' believability ratings, and they've been on a decline from 2002 to 2012. I don't think they've done the study in the last 2 years or 3 years. But from 2002 to 2012, the believability factor was going down with organizations, and more people were, had no credibility in the stations that they were watching.
And I think some of that, too, is getting to your point, too, is that you can look at the cable stations. I think the decline starts to cross with the increasing popularity of the sort of non-objective cable news programs. When you look at I'm meaning specifically, obviously, Fox News, but also MSNBC. And so I think people do feel maybe it was getting rid of the fairness doctrine, whatever it mm-hmm. was. But television has kind of led the way in some ways by becoming so partisan that if you disagree, then, of course, it's not trustworthy. It's not credible.
Yeah, it's very polarized. I just looked at a study about that. And for Republicans, the believability factor for Fox News was high, but that was among Democrats, that was low. And most of the other stations, what was much higher, except for Fox. So there's definitely a polarization. People want to believe in certain stations or they lean a certain way. They're not attracted maybe to people who they don't agree with.
Yeah, and it's
but
sad.
We don't see the objectivity there.
Yeah, and I think it's not just television. I think AM, what I call hate talk radio, really led the way starting in the 80s and early 90s, really, with that sort of very biased, opinionated type of programming.
And, you know, and we probably see it more in the news. If newspapers were more successful, we'd probably see more of it. But, you know, that's always been. The publisher is usually somebody who's in the business community, more concerned with the business side. And that's often reflected in the editorial pages. And so, you know, sometimes you do see that, too, in the newspaper industry.
Well, I tend to think that the audience is smarter than we really account for. And if we're going to put out that clickbait like the water skiing squirrel, then they're not going to want to tune in.
All right. Hey, we need to wrap this up for today. Our listeners can join us again next week at this time for more of Shop Talk.